3:35. Today we have with us Senator Stedman, Senator Stevens, Senator Wilkowski, Senator Wagner, myself, Huggins. Lisa McGuire's going to join us online. And Senator Green is excused. She's online now? Lisa, how are you doing?
How are you?
Good. We're proud to hear your voice.
Great to hear yours as well.
Yes. And today we have multiple appointments and some reappointments. And I would announce up front that we are not going to deal with Commissioner Denby Lloyd. There's been some heightened interest in his position, in all fairness to him. I thought it would be more appropriate for him to be present so that he could account for himself in that respect. So we will not be addressing him. But today we have online Dick Rohr. Are you there, Dick? Yeah, Dick. Okay, we'll get to you here in a little bit. Kathy Forrest, are you there? Kathy Forrest,
Alaska. Yes, I was muted.
Okay, Alaska on the gas. Good to have you with us. And Bob Bell and Ben Grusendorf, are you with us?
Yes, we're here.
Okay, very good. Very good. We're going to start out first with Mr. Tom Hartig. Tom, would you come up, please?
Larry Hartig.
Say again?
Larry.
Not Tom Irwin, Larry Hartley.
I'm sorry. That's what I thought. But
I'm not in the room, so I knew you meant me.
I can't read. I'm sorry.
You're up.
You wouldn't mistake me for Tom.
Somebody said all lawyers look alike. I didn't say that. Somebody.
Oh, I don't know that Tom's a lawyer. But
in any event, we are here to hear from you in reference to DEC and Commission. Of course, your deputy there. Or your traveling companion has already gave us an up.
My guide.
But in all seriousness, would you just give a quick overview of your background? And I heard the questions about, what had you ever done in DEC arena, and you were just a lawyer and hadn't practiced in that. But if you just give us an insight, please.
Yeah, I'll give you a quick background on myself. Senator Huggins, members of the Senate Resource Committee, I really appreciate this opportunity. I'm really proud about the governor's appointment and now to be here in front of you for confirmation. I've been in Alaska since 1967, lived most of my life in Anchorage, other than going out for university and law school. Lived a short while in Kenai for about a year and a half. I managed a small company down there on the Kenai and had a branch office in Homer. But moved up here with my family. My father was in the legislature in the early 70s. He was a resource attorney also. And then went to college at the University of Utah with the original intent to go into medicine. Took a lot of biology and science. But during that summer, I was working at Alyeska Pipeline Service Company for a contractor. And I was doing right-of-way work, title work, support for that. In fact, the DEC office that I have in Anchorage is the old BLM headquarters. I used to go down there and buy gravel for the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System. So that building already feels a bit familiar. But anyway, during college, I did get a strong interest in natural resources and an interest in going into law, and made a decision during that time period to not go the medicine route but become an attorney. But also I'd made the decision that I didn't want to go into debt going to law school. So I worked between my days at the University of Utah in Alyeska and going to law school, and that's when I after I left Alyeska, I went and worked for a title company and managed a small title office on the Kenai. And from there, I went to law school in Portland, Oregon, graduating in 1983, came back to Alaska immediately. Or I should say in Oregon, just to give more background there. I had several jobs, but ended up as what was called a regional underwriter for Safeco Insurance, title insurance company in Portland. And they had, I believe at that time, 31 offices scattered around the state. My responsibility was in charge of underwriting, auditing, and training for the company for those offices. And then I left that job to come back to Alaska and went into practice. And the bulk of my practice has been natural resource and environmental law, primarily environmental law, I'd say, for the last 15 years. Representing a whole variety of clients, everything from PERS and TERS here for the state on contaminated sites, either dealing with cleanups or litigation relating to contamination, I've worked a lot with Native corporations on various issues, school with an asbestos issue, individuals with environmental issues, but also on the permitting side with large projects in Alaska, including several large mines in the state, helping them with permitting and permitting compliance. So if I was going to summarize my law career for the last 15 years, it's assisting people in complying with environmental laws, spending a lot of time at DEC's offices and an EPA in Seattle, and say I have a passion for environmental law. And I hadn't intended to go into public service. It came as somewhat of a surprise when Governor Palin called me. It was a cold call getting it from her, but and I hadn't worked on her campaign. I didn't even know her until after the election. But some of the people that were advising her had known me over the years and had suggested me for the DEC position, and she asked if I would be interested in it. And as I got to know her and she got to know me, I thought this is somebody I could really work with. And I really, a lot of her ideas about more open government, closer to the people, and you know, doing resource development, but you know, in a wise, environmentally sound way, really resonated with me. And also, I knew the people at DEC. I knew it was a good department. I felt that I could bring my experience on the private industry side in to add another dimension. Not that I thought that the agency wasn't doing a good job, but there were problems over there, but I thought it would be helpful, you know, in their jobs. And also, I knew that Alaska had a lot of interesting issues coming up, including the gas pipeline, that I thought it would be exciting to work on. I thought, well, I started my career on the TAPS, the Alyeska oil and gas or oil line, and I could end my career on the gas line, perhaps, and thought that would be good bookends on my career. So that's my background. That's how I ended up here today.
Okay, questions for Mr. Harding. Do you know any of the people here on the panel?
I think I've met everybody at this point.
Well, very good. Very yeah. good. Well, just a couple of questions for you, formality-wise. I mean, I see your client list here. You don't, you know, since you know, there's a question of ethics and activities, mm-hmm. do you have any difficulties with your past affiliations in your new position?
Well, several. I'll give you several thoughts on that, Senator Huggins. One, if I thought I had a bias, I wouldn't be taking this job because I couldn't sit there and do the job and tell people one thing and be thinking something else. That's not like me. If you talk to anybody, whether they were with me or against me in my past job, they would tell you that I'm up front, put my cards on the table, and what I say is what I think. I can't help, I'm just that way. So but I know too that even if I think personally I can segregate a decision, you know, that would have involved a prior client, just the appearance of being involved in something like that isn't appropriate. It takes away from the public trust in the agency and its decisions. So my plan would be, particularly on anything that I was involved in, just to recuse myself at least for a substantial period of time, you know, so that there wouldn't be any cloud over those kind of decisions. And certainly I would be ultra sensitive to that. I would lean, if anything, towards, you know, segregating myself from a decision that I was in, well, I was on the other side, perhaps you would say, or advocating for a client for a particular decision before I came into this job.
Okay. And just on a professional yet somewhat personal note, I've noted that there's a heightened interest also in retiree rehire, and I just make that as a comment to you that,
right,
you know, there are people out there very sensitive to that, to include myself and probably some others. Yeah. Other final questions for Mr. Harding?
No.
Could I have a motion to move Mr. Harding's name?
So moved.
Okay. And I'll just read this quick sentence here. This does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of Mr. Harding during further sessions. So, but Larry, we say thank you very much for, you know, volunteering for this mm-hmm. duty in some respects, because, as you know, there are sacrifices to be made to do this sort of thing. We say thank you, and you certainly have a great reputation and a file here that speaks well of you, and yeah. Those two combinations ought to do well for us.
Thank you very much, Senator Huggins. I certainly look forward to working with everybody in the legislature and, you know, in the years ahead.
Okay. Good luck. Okay, next we will take up the reappointment of Bob Bell and Ben Grusendorf. Hey, Bob, could you lead out and just give us a quick synopsis of yourself and your activity on the board, and then we'll take questions of yourself and then Ben, if you would follow suit.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. Be glad to. I was just appointed to the board in.
Yeah, Bob, put yourself on the record so we just got it for official.
I'm sorry. This is Bob Bell, and I was just appointed to the board in November, November or December, to finish out Mike Quigley's term. So I have limited experience on the board to date. I think what I bring is a perspective of somebody who has participated in Alaska wildlife as a hunter for almost 40 years now, and bring the perspective of a, I guess, for lack of a better term, an urban hunter. I'm an engineer and surveyor and have worked throughout the state in that capacity too, so I'm also keenly aware of the other side, which is the rural issues that come up in regard to fish and game. So I think I can bring a good perspective from both sides in that regard.
Okay, thanks, Bob. Are there questions for Bob for reappointment? Seeing no questions. Bob, just a couple of comments. You and I have been to a couple of the same places. I see you're with the construction 497th, I guess, in Vietnam back in 68-69. But probably more appropriate for what the duty you're taking on is that you're one of those guys that used to hunt 16B before it got closed down for lack of moose.
That's right.
I'm assuming at this point I'm going to be voting for you, but the expectation is you're going to get us some moose back at 16B.
I intend to do everything I can to accomplish that, and I think the department agrees with that wholeheartedly.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Ben, please.
No, wait a minute.
I'm sorry. Let's back up. Senator Wagner has a question.
And this, I think it's relevant, Mr. Chairman. There's a lot of information going around right now around the state, and there's ads being bought as to the process that was taken to appoint Denby Lloyd, and also there's more consternation about the two people he has picked as his one, I believe, is the deputy director, and the other is the deputy commissioner, and the other is the director of game. Do you have any comments on that?
Well, it's difficult for me to comment on it because I'm relatively new at this. My personal impression of Denby is that I think he'll do a fine job, and that's what I heard the other members of the joint board say when we considered his appointment. As far as the other guys, I really couldn't comment because I don't know.
Hey, Bob. This is Lisa. I'm acting as your lawyer right now and advising you not to give opinions.
Okay.
You have your own confirmation hearing.
All right.
You're gonna walk right into it.
Okay.
Yeah, sure. Senator McGuire, please stand by.
I don't like that at all, Mr. Chairman. The other question I have to ask is why did the board elect, along with the fish board, to only send one name forward to the governor when you were discussing and forwarding the picks from the joint meeting of the boards on the commissioner's position?
Well, I can't speak for the other board members, but I think if you look at the voting record that night, I voted to send three names forward, personally. But the vote didn't go that way, so I was in the minority on that.
I'm there, too. That's all right.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm kind of curious on your position on, as we go forward with more and more pressure, I see there's some bear guiding interest in the past. what kind of policy the state should have in allocating big game resources.
I'm sorry, in allocating what?
Big game resources.
Well, you know, I think I'm starting to learn this stuff, but I think, first of all, we have to consider this assistance issue first, not only on a federal, but on a state basis. And then after that, I think the allegation is Alaskan residents next, and then non-residents after that.
I'm referring more to the allocation of permitted bear hunts and how that should be handled.
I'm not sure what you're asking. You mean in terms of the Kodiak bears with the permits there, or just general bear season?
Well, they could possibly be on Kodiak Island, but any islands could be black bear or brown bear. But there seems to be an ever-increasing pressure on the big game animals and a restriction and how they're dealt with as far as the number of bear tags issued. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, the Constitution says we're supposed to manage for sustained yield. So I think we rely on the department's biologist to tell us what number of bears would be appropriate to take out of a particular population. There's a certain number of bears that need to be available in order to maintain our guiding industry. But my attitude typically is that if there isn't enough, that the Alaskans should get first choice on any game animal, and that would include bears.
Try to ask the question another way, maybe a little more direct way. Should the big game industry go the way of some form of a along the form of a fisheries model, like limited entry or an IFQ and halibut, where you possibly have de facto ownership of so many bear harvests as a guide?
I don't think we would want to do that. I think that would be the game resources of the state is supposed to be available to all of us on an equal basis. As soon as we start getting into that permitting, start saying we're giving ownership to somebody and not to somebody else. So my philosophy is equal access to everybody.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Other questions for Mr. Bell? Okay, Bob, thank you very much. Next, Ben, would you put yourself on the record, please, and we'd be glad to hear from you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Madam President, and other members of the committee. I'm Ben Grusendorf from Sitka, Alaska.
Yeah, go ahead, Ben. If you could just give us a quick thumbnail sketch of your activities on the board and other pertinent things you think we should be aware of for your appointment.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I grew up in northern Minnesota in the woods, moved to the rainforest in Sitka, been there for 40-some years. My interests have always been wildlife, hunting and viewing, and seeing what they're doing. I did spend 20 years in the legislative body, and I think you look at the state statutes and you'll see many of my little handiworks in relation to wildlife. I've been on the Board of Game now for 6 years. Evidently, there's been several governors that felt I had something to contribute. I always try to give the upside and the downside to a proposal, and sometimes much to the consternation of other people who are listening to me, but I'm very interested in it. It's great to be with a bunch of people that talk about something you're interested in, and that's wildlife. And you hear some real interesting stories. I've never seen a 15-foot bear, but I've heard some people talking to me around here that have seen one.
Very good. I think Senator Wagner had a question for you on how the Commissioner of Fish and Game got appointed.
You hear my previous question, Ben?
Pretty much the gist of it. We're having a very difficult time receiving you here. I hope we're much better at your end there. But what happened when the joint boards looked at the candidates, Denji Boyd was head and shoulders above the all the other candidates, mainly from a managerial point of view. In other words, how do you run an organization? How do you make it work? And he had the diversified, diverse background, and most of us were assured, felt that he would pick people around him that were knowledgeable in the areas that he might not be that knowledgeable in. And I think he has done that in relation with the game issues and other issues out there. So I felt that he was a very excellent candidate. And as I said, mainly from the ability to run the department.
But aren't you required by statute to send a list of names, not just a single individual's name, forward to the governor?
Not necessarily, but oftentimes a governor has taken a name or two that has been submitted to them, and in this case to her, and simply says, add more names. In other words, the governor is in a position to simply say, give me more names. Most of them are pretty confident that the governor was supportive of Denby, and I guess you could say in an odd way, we took some pressure off from her from being the arbitrator and having people angry at her should she sit down and then pick Denby Lloyd. So I guess from your questioning, the Board of Game and the Board of Fish took the brunt of our decision.
Okay, thanks, Ben.
Senator Stedman.
Yeah, thank you. Ben, this is Bert. I'd like to ask you, the same kind of question as I asked the earlier fellow, but, I'm a little bit more familiar with Southeast, as you're well aware, but the issue deals with your thoughts on big game animals, and particularly brown bear. In a common or a state with our resources held in common, and the Forest Service owning most of the landmass in Southeast and restricting access, which appears to be, in essence, privatizing the harvesting of big game animals. I'd just like to know what your thoughts are on that subject matter and if it's creating some kind of a conflict.
Well, years ago we had great concern because anybody that had a big game guide license could hunt any place in the state, and that created a problem. Some areas where there was a lot of bear to be harvested and caused a problem for those in the local area that were trying to make a living off from it. So most guides have certain areas that they, are allowed to bring their clients to. And so in a way, it has been kind of a separation, of what areas certain guides are allowed to bring clients into. But you're right in relation to the United States Forest Service, and there's a lot of permitting questions that have occurred, and they have played a very heavy role in our brown bear management in Southeast, and in particular Game Unit 4, which you represent. But Bert, I don't know how else to answer that question, but we're very concerned because of the harvest. Close to 45% happen to be female bears, and in one area it was over 50%, so there's a lot of concern on this part. We have a brown bear management unit proposal that's been developed for us, and we're trying to follow it the best we can.
Yeah, well, even more on point, what concerns me is not the management of the harvest itself, because we all recognize, you know, we have to have management of both our fish and game, or we're going to, you know, lose it. But how they have allocated it, and in particularly the amount of bears that some hunters have versus other hunters. And I'd hate to see us go down the road like we have done with IFQs, where we end up with a lot of the ownership of the resource out of state. And with the Forest Service restricting access into the Tongass, it appears to me to be a virtual de facto privatization of big game hunting in the Tongass.
Well, Senator Stedman, you're right, and it is a concern. How we go about addressing it is very difficult, but what we do try to figure out is how many brown bears are in a given area, and what could be the allocation or the number of harvest, what we call the harvestable surplus, can be taken out of that area. And then we try to go that way. Of course, every brown bear that's shot has to be sealed by the state. And so we keep a very close track on biologically, you know, how we're handling the bear population. Senator, I'm afraid I'm not answering your question because I don't know how to quite get over the hurdle of the United States Forest Service and other federal agencies.
Right, I guess that's the point of the question, where we can have some management over our, in this case, our big game animals, but then we get the unfortunate opportunity of having to deal with the policies put forward by the Forest Service, which basically restricts access and privatizes.
Stedman, the Forest Service was very active when we were developing our brown bear management scheme for Southeast there, but yet they hold a certain trump card.
One of the issues that we face, one of the issues that we appear to be facing with the inquiry by the FBI is the impact on privatization of resources and who's pushing what button on the privatization and who ends up creating the wealth and who ends up with the wealth. And I'm just makes me a little gun shy when it appears in this case the industry, which would be the guide industry, seems to have had a fairly effective hand in allocating who got how many bears and where. And looks to me like there's too many correlations between that issue and what we're facing in our fisheries issue, just on a much smaller scale.
Yeah, Senator, I agree, but a lot of the bears that are taken are by residents, and of course you're talking about the commercial aspect of it with the guided hunts that are usually non-resident. I will talk, and maybe you should too, talk to Scott McLeod and Brad Dennison and Paul Johnson. He's on our commercial services board, but they're all guides there and have concerns about the logo part two.
Hey, Senator Wagner.
Thanks, Ben.
Well, I just want to reiterate for the committee, what was stated here is not quite right. Under the appointment of the Commissioner of Fish and Game, the statute reads, the governor shall appoint the Commissioner of Fish and Game from a list of qualified persons nominated by the Board of Fisheries and the Board of Game meeting in joint session, subject to the right of the governor to request additional nominations. Now, that doesn't mean you give them one, and then if she doesn't like that, you give them additional. It says a list, And if she doesn't like any name on that list, then she can ask for more. But the statute's pretty clear that the Board of Fish and Game should send a list of applications to the governor, not a single individual name. That's the point I wanted to make. And the statutes are very clear on that.
Yeah, Ben, let me ask you in that respect. Bob Bell said that he voted to forward multiple names. You said you voted for a person. Is that? Did I hear you correctly?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We put one person on the list. If the governor was not satisfied with that, she could have very easily told us to put another name on there. And I'm aware of governors that actually told the boards whose name should be on that list. And our indication was that Denby Lloyd would be on that list.
Yeah, that was my next question for you. You had made the statement that you knew the governor was supportive of Mr. Lloyd. How did you know that?
Well, he must have had, or she must have had, a lot of confidence in her because, Denby Lloyd, because when she came in, she appointed him the acting commissioner and pro tem, or whatever you want to call it. And that was kind of the indication there that he must have some good qualifications, because the governor simply isn't going to hand it over to somebody that can't run the ship.
Okay. And let me bounce back to Senator Wagner's point in statute. If you had it do over again, would you send more than one name forward?
Pardon?
If you had it to do over again, would you send multiple names forward?
I guess so. But then that puts the pressure on the governor, and the governor gets to be the bad person. As I said, when we were dealing with this, that was one of the things I brought up, that we would be taking the flak. But there was no doubt in the board's mind at that time who was the best qualified. The question was, should we throw these other names in there too? And these other names, they were qualified, they were good people, but not to the level that we could see in Denby Lloyd. In fact, I think Commissioner Mackay, former commissioner, was thinking about submitting his name, and as soon as he found out that Denby was interested in it, he quickly pulled his resume out, because he felt that would be a person that could lead the Department of Fish and Game in the right direction.
Okay, thank you. Senator Wilikowski.
Do you remember what the vote was to forward only Mr. Lloyd's name?
Well, no, I don't, because we did vote on each individual, the people that were suggested that put in their names, but we had to have four votes from the Board of Fish and the Board of Game, and the only person that got the four votes, actually when it was over all the votes, was Denby Lloyd. He got whoever was voting. I can't remember if it was 7-7 or whether we had 6 on the Board of Game, but some of the others just didn't receive any votes from the Board of Game or from the Board of Fish. There were several that didn't receive any votes at all from the Board of Fish, or one that I know of. So you have to have, of the two boards, you have to have four on each board, for a total of 8 votes, 4 on each, to be able to make a decision. So we weren't really getting there. The Board of Fish was very strong on the commissioner whose name was submitted, and the Board of Game also felt, after discussion, that was a good idea. And yeah, you know, you're right. We should have just sent all the names in. Here, you know, you do it, but that's not what happened.
If I could just follow up, when you did forward the name on, did anyone in the Palin administration respond to you and say that you weren't in compliance with the statute and that you needed to submit more names?
No. Not a word.
Okay, additional questions. Lisa, you have a question?
No, I'm good.
Okay, all right, very good.
Ending the discussion.
Okay, thank you. Well, do I have a motion in accordance with the statute to move these two names forward, Robert Bell and Ben Grusendorf, which does not give a commitment to vote for him in full session?
I'll go ahead and make a motion that we move Robert Bell and Ben Grusendorf's name forward for the position on the game board.
Yeah, thank you very much, Bob and Ben. We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Okay, next we'll take up Mr. Tom Irwin. Tom, would you come forward?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sorry you had to go through that. Now, you didn't have to go before the Fish and Game Board, did you?
No, sir, I did not. And actually, that's the first calm few minutes I've had all day, so it wasn't so bad.
That's good. That's good. Could you just put your name on the record? And
certainly. My name is Tom Irwin. And we're talking about Commissioner Department of Natural Resources.
Okay. And if you would just give us a quick sketch of your background, qualifications, and why we should forward your name.
Sure. First off, thank you, ma'am. First off, I will tell you what I'm about. I'm a Christian. I'm not perfect, but that's my basic principles. I have a wonderful wife. That's really important. 39 years, 7 months, and 4 days, and we'll make 40 by summer. My wife really supports me, and you all need to know that. Two daughters and a son-in-law who have moved to Alaska, and three Alaska-born granddaughters, and that really drives it. I have a background. I'm a graduate from the Colorado School of Mines. It was really mineral engineering chemistry in that part of the world. It was like chemical engineering. I took a lot of metallurgical and mining courses. I've been in the resource development industry in multiple responsibilities, from operations to management, design, purchase, across the gamut, sir. Previously, I've been a commissioner of DNR, and it's a privilege to be asked by the Governor Sarah Palin to come back. I took a lot of time deciding that, and it had no reflection on her. Absolutely none. I look forward to working with this legislature also, and I know as a commissioner I'm accountable to you all. But it took so long because my wife had had an accident, and I wasn't about ready to leave home until I was sure she was mending, and I also needed her concurrence. But my whole life has been revolved around resource development. If I might answer, what drives me? Why do I want to do this? And my philosophy is my children, my grandchildren need a career to stay in Alaska. If we don't develop our resources according to the Constitution, they can't stay here. The second thing that drives me, they don't want to stay here if Alaska isn't as special for them as it is for us all today. And we have to have both. And I think it's really worthwhile spending time because it's an investment, particularly for our kids and grandkids. And that's what I'm really committed to, both sides of that coin, and it has to be done that way.
Questions for Mr. Sure. Irwin? Yes, Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, Tom, great respect for you and all you've done. I just want to tell you, in the area I represent over on Lake Yeliano, we have an enormous conflict between a resource that has been there for a number of years, that's been fisheries been used for a number of years, and a resource that is potentially being developed. How do you see the state proceeding? Not specifically in that area, but when you've got sort of competing resources, what's the principles that would drive you in issues like that?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, I'm glad you asked that question because this is a critical issue to Alaska. I know this is about me, but I'm speaking for the administration, for the governor, as commissioner of DNR, as Department of Natural Resources. This is a twofold issue. One is we will never jeopardize Lake Iliamna or Bristol Bay in that fishery. It's a renewable resource, and we have to protect it, period. You can't put it at risk. There's a second side to this is we're a fair state of laws and regulations based on a constitution. We talk about resource development. We have a very clear process to evaluate these projects. If we become a state that randomly chooses by individuals or boroughs or groups of people who say this is good or this is bad without going through a process, then we jeopardize our whole system. Now we're not talking about a mine pebble. We're talking about the next mines. We're talking about oil and gas. Because if you satisfy one group, the outside pressures from the lower 48 get very involved. We must have a process. If there's a flaw in the process, and that works both ways, if we're duplicating efforts and we're wasting states' money or companies' money, we shouldn't be doing it. If we have a shortfall for evaluation, we need to fix it. Now, I want to make it very clear, I've been through these processes. And if somebody's going to present something on Bristol Bay or Pebble specifically to DNR, they better be well prepared. And I haven't seen anything yet. We're jousting with something fictitious at this point. But they need to bring in, before we want to talk reclamation plans, I want to see as much effort put into starting up as shutting down. I'm adamant about seeing water quality, subsurface, surface. I want background on hydrology. It's critical. I want financial assurances. I want to know what financial assurances there are during startup, midstream interruptions when you're operating, closure. You have to have these things. Dam stability. I know a lot about dam stability. I want to know ground accelerations and is it tied into bedrock? Can it be supported? Now, I don't have the expertise of dam safety engineers, but it needs to be clear before we even start the process, you have to have all of this. We can't as a state, and I feel strongly about this, we can't as a state go to random processes. Having looked at properties up here in a past career, I know how companies think. And if we start being perceived as a state that will randomly choose without a fairness, and we are fair people in this state, if we start choosing randomly, we will drive resource development away for two reasons. Risk too high, and they know outside influences can make the decisions that the state should be making.
Other questions for Tom?
Senator Stevens stole my questions. Thank you, sir.
any other questions for Tom? I have a question for you. In the business of ethics and conflict of interest, you know, we obviously AGEA is the number one thought on all of our minds for the future mm-hmm. of the state of Alaska. And over the last month, there's been multiple articles in the paper about some people that worked for Murkowski last year and that they're now lobbyists and then, but I'll get to it. One of the people that was presenting today on the third floor, your deputy, was also in one of those articles, in multiple of articles, saying that, you know, in a former life, she worked as a lobbyist for potentially one of the competitors. I think one of them was, I'm not sure who all introduced himself, but a number of people. And, of course, we are in the process of writing regulations in that respect, and, you know, some would be pre-employment, some would be our post-service and employment in this case. What's your thoughts on that? Because it's something I assume you have to deal with.
Mr. Chairman, first off, on that particular issue, let's hit it head on. The article didn't present the correct dates. Let me tell you the history about that. When I became commissioner, and I assume this is the case you're talking about, there was a deputy commissioner who actually helped convince me I should come. But she had committed to leaving to be a partner in a firm. She reported correctly the firm did, that she was going to go do this. At my request and great pushing, I said, you got to give me a few weeks here to help me out. And she clearly did not start her new job till toward the end of that month, 23rd, 26th of February. She stuck with me that much longer. She's incredibly honorable. And so she stuck with me, and they tied this whole reporting together as February. Second issue I want to remind you of on this specific issue, we were doing no lobbying or negotiating at that time. None. The process hadn't even started yet. So, for her situation, her loyalty to this state, her honesty, and frankly, her support of me when I was fired, her leaving, her integrity is impeccable, and she does this state a great service. So that's the first part of the issue. I am adamantly and very comfortable with that issue. Second thing on ethics, I think ethics are very important in this world. Sometimes I wonder if we all haven't lost our way, but I think you folks have a real problem because it's tough to legislate ethics. Ethics is in here, and each of you have to judge your own ethics, and I'm not being critical. It's just my strong opinion. Your ethics have to be inside. You can have all the laws in the world, and if you're not ethical, you're probably not ethical. It's just defined it better, and you're caught sooner. So do we need ethics? Absolutely. We need sidebars to know where people are fair in and out. I think we also need to question the issue, and it's tough in Alaska. If I may speak for you all, you don't have full-time jobs here. We have people that once they leave government service also, they still want to live here and work here. And we need to be careful. You have some tough decisions. How can they go back into industry? You certainly don't want people who work in the legislative area or in governmental service then having to leave the state because they can't find work. So I'm not answering your question. I'm probably muddying it more. But those are tough issues. You've got to allow people to be able to stay here. Here's two things that I thought were very important for me on ethics. When I was vice president and general manager of the Fort Knox mine, I'm sure you know that. When I became commissioner, I signed over everything with that project to a deputy commissioner. I told them I couldn't win. They would think I'm too harsh on them. Others might think I'm too easy on them. I think it was ethical to write that letter, put it in the file, turn it over to a deputy commissioner, and I didn't even attend meetings. And it was sort of killing me because I wanted to know what the next mine plan was and life of mine. I didn't attend any of those because I think there'd be a conflict of interest. Did I overdo it? Maybe, but I feel good about myself. And so I think that's important. Second thing is, when I left state government, I wanted to stay in the state, and I was offered a good position in Golden Valley Electric Association, and there's very clear rules about lobbying when you're a commissioner or higher up. The people I worked with said, boy, there's a bright line. Don't even go close to it. It was mutual. We're not going to go close to it. But in reality, it was hard for me to talk to you all unless you called me, unless it was a whole group. But we stayed away from it. You can't go near those bright lines if you, quote, want to be considered ethical. You folks have some tough decisions to make, but the appearance with the Alaskan public, there's some real ethics gaps.
Yeah, just to follow up, I don't mean to intimate that I have any questions about anybody's integrity or or their honesty, which is not the question in my mind. Mind you, just hit on the first one is the appearance, but number two, because the person we're talking about is part of the process now of dealing with potentially some what was I guess a client that you were or her employer before, whether legally. It will come back to bite at us.
I don't believe so. If it ever got to that issue, I think in the courts we would request her negotiation notes with TransCanada, and I think you'll find she beat the tar out of them. I wish we had done the same in other negotiations.
Yeah,
beat the tars, minor language, sorry.
Yeah,
we very diligently, and she is lead there, negotiated incredibly well.
Right. And I didn't say any names. I didn't mean to intimate any
of
that.
No, but so I really, it's important, and I was really gratified that this particular person would stay on.
Right, yeah. Okay, do I have a motion to move Mr. Irwin's name, which is not a commitment to vote for him in final process? Senator Wagner.
So move.
Tom, thank you very much.
Thank you for fitting me in. Today is busy with the AGEA rollout, and we have more conferences on phones and news media, so thanks for getting me out of here on time.
Yep,
appreciate it.
Commissioner,
good luck,
you welcome
folks.
Back.
Yeah.
It is good to be back.
Hey, Dick Rohr, are you there?
Chairman, I didn't sign here.
Very good. Could you, you're a candidate for the Big Game Commercial Services Board. You're a reappointment, is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, could you just give us a quick thumbnail sketch of, or number one, put yourself on the record, and number two, give us a quick thumbnail sketch and at least one reason why we should reappoint you.
Happy to do that, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dick Rohr, came to Alaska in 1965, have been involved in some way or another in the guide industry ever since then. Guiding has been my primary source of livelihood since the 80s, early 80s. Have a wife of 36 years, four children, seven grandchildren. Three of those children, five of the grandchildren, live in Kodiak. I'm a year-round resident of Kodiak, no winter homes outside. And I am a master guide, active in the guide business. And so I'll be happy to answer questions.
Okay. Any questions of Dick? Yep. Senator Wagner.
Yeah, Dick, we just reconstituted this service board a couple of years ago, right?
That is correct.
How's things working now?
The board has worked very well together as far as the board members are concerned. We've been told it's the best board interaction of any boards as far as working together. I hope to see the board process make it through the sunset provision, and I guess that's one of the main reasons I would like to stay on and see that we make it through that process.
Follow-up, there are staggered terms on the board?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And you had a two-year term then, right?
I had a term initially.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Senator Stevens.
Hi, Dick. This is Gary here. I've known Dick for probably 40 years, I suppose, now, and he's a person who has a great deal of respect from the community, and not only in his industry, but also from the other things he's been involved in. Dick, I didn't realize you were involved in writing that Kodiak Archipelago Bear Conservation Management Plan.
Yes, I certainly was, and I listened with interest. I wanted to raise my hand and comment several times to some of Senator Stedman's questions about Southeast. The Kodiak Brown Bear Plan is used extensively, very well respected all over the world. That's our brown bear management Bible, so to speak. Was involved in that and continue to be on a committee that is known as CUBS that helps both the federal government and the state biologists implement all the parts of that.
Well, believe it or not, I read that several times, and actually, I did a recording of it for Norm Sutliff, so he could hear it because of his eyesight. And it's an excellent plan. And you feel it's I think it was probably in excess of 2,500 brown bears on Kodiak, and you figure that's been a very successful plan then. Yeah, I guess, Dick, the question is, are you pretty happy then with how that plan has worked out?
Nope, upset. Hey, Dick, Charlie Huggins, can you hear us okay?
I think he just hung up.
He didn't like your question.
He didn't want to talk to you.
That's a famous technique. The line went out.
That's right. Well, we've used that in Kodiak for years.
Can you hear me now?
So you're not going to vote for him, I guess.
I'm going to vote for him, yeah. He's a fine person. He's done a great job there.
Okay. Well, on a more serious note, Leif Wilson is not with us. You know, and Senator Wagner's right. It was, I think, 2 years ago that we reconstituted the board. So I will... it's my recommendation that we continue with the process of these two names. We haven't had, that I know of, any difficulties. Hey, Dick, are you back?
I'm back.
Okay, good. While you were off net, we assumed that you did not want to answer that question, so you had technical difficulties. If that's not correct, you can answer the question.
Well, and what part of it did you miss? Can you give me the question again?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, Dick, just commenting that it seems to me that the conservation management plan on Kodiak has been particularly successful, and I assume you'd agree with that.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, Dick, Charlie Huggins here. Could you describe for me what oversight you have over guide conduct and activities?
Well, part of the legislative mandate for the board was to establish ethics, which the board did at our first meeting, which was placed into regulation fairly quickly. We're responsible for licensing of people who meet the criteria to be licensed as new guides in all categories, assistant, Class A, particularly registered, where a written test is required. And then we have disciplinary authority as well.
Right. And please stop me if you're dealing with the case presently, but I know this past sheep season we had an episode where a guide, quote, broke the wings off two airplanes to include breaking the lower longerons and flew away afterwards. Have you dealt with that case? Has it been disposed of?
We have not dealt with that case. I am...
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. I don't want to prejudice you on the case, my assumption. Let me go at it another way. How long does it normally take for you we're rolling up towards 6 months or so afterwards. How long does it normally take for something like that to get to you? You ever heard of it?
Well, we've only been in the board's only been in existence for 2 years now, and cases. I'm a little bit frustrated at how slowly cases get to us. So I can't answer that, but I can tell you that a couple of the cases we did see were from 3 or 4 years ago.
Well, I can only speak for myself. I will be interested when we review the sunset provision, if that's improved or not, because if that's the case, I mean, it's a question mark in my mind whether we're functioning correctly or not. But we'll leave that to another day. Other questions for Dick? Senator Wagner?
Well, I'd kind of like to follow up a little bit. Where do you see the main slowdown, Dick? Or is it just a combination of different things?
Well, I think normally those disciplinary actions would come to us from Commerce, the investigator with Commerce, and right as the board got established, we had a change of personnel there, so that was a little disappointing to me, and I'm not sure that the investigator we have right now is a permanent investigator, and they also, we only have one person that deals with gag-related issues, plus he has other boards to deal with as well. So it's always been a bit of a personnel issue from the Department of Commerce with the investigative side there.
And that's in Commerce because they are the licensing, right?
That is correct. We get our authority through Commerce, not Fish and Game.
Thank you.
Okay, other questions for Dick? Okay, if not, I have a motion to move two names for Richard Rohrer and Leif Wilson. Leif is from Tok, and he also is a reappointment. And the intent is for signing this sheet is not that it's a vote, but just the fact that we're confirming to go forward for a special session or a joint session.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you, Dick. Appreciate it very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Question?
Yeah.
We're only right now taking action on Dick's name, though, right?
We got Leif here. Do you want to talk to Leif also?
Well, he should.
He's not online.
No, I understand that, but we should
scratch his name. Okay, Kathy Forrester.
I'm here.
Yeah, sorry, Kathy, it's taken so long. We are to you now. Would you put yourself on the record and just give us a quick synopsis of your background and why we should confirm you?
It is Kathy Forrester. I'm currently the engineering commissioner at the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. Good afternoon, Chairman Huggins, Madam President, and other members of the Senate Resources Committee. Thank you for taking the time this afternoon to consider me for reappointment to this important position. And thank you for allowing me to listen to the other gentlemen. It's been very interesting for me and humbling. I have been serving the state of Alaska in the AODCC since March of 2005 when I was appointed to complete the unexpired term of the engineering commissioner. So I have a few reasons why I wish to be reappointed. I think that's what you had asked for. First, Alaska has given a lot to me and to my family, and I'm grateful for the chance to give something back. My sons were talking the other day about how thankful they are that our family moved to Alaska when they were very young. Then they went on to list all of the reasons that this has been a wonderful place to grow up, and it's the only place they want to live as adults. So you can see I have a bit of a personal interest in working for the good of the state. The second reason is purely business. The AODCC is in the middle of several extremely important and highly technical projects right now, and many of these are heavily dominated by engineering issues. For example, we just completed a technical study that will inevitably assist us in determining the appropriate allowable gas offtake from Prudhoe Bay when we have the North Slope gas sale. We are also in the early phases of a similar study for the Point Thompson Reservoir. We're in the process of updating our regulations regarding well safety systems, and we're in conceptual phase of a review of our regulations and processes involving gas disposition. The state has an investment in time in me for the time that I've already spent understanding and helping to shape our evaluation of these complex issues, and I feel that it would be a setback for someone new to have to get up to speed on them, especially since we're in the middle of many of them. Lastly, throughout my career as a petroleum engineer, I've been blessed with wonderful opportunities to learn and contribute, and my time with the AODCC has certainly been one such opportunity. I'm especially pleased and honored to serve the people of Alaska as part of such a well-respected commission and in concert with such intelligent, honest, ethical, and hardworking gentlemen as Dan Sina and John Norman. And by the way, they will pay me later for making that mistake. This concludes what I have to say. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Kathy. Questions for Kathy? Yes, Senator Wagner.
Kathy, you're a reservoir engineer, correct?
Yes, sir.
Point Thompson is, what do they call that, a retrograde field?
It's a gas condensate or a retrograde condensate field, yes.
Yeah. Could you just real shortly give us your take? Exxon has claimed many times that that field is not economical to produce as far as the gas liquids and the without producing the gas at the same time. Is that a true statement, or are they not telling us the whole truth about that reservoir?
I certainly wouldn't feel comfortable calling Exxon liars, and I don't have enough information to do that, even if I did feel comfortable.
I'm not asking you that. I just want your opinion of...
In my opinion, there is a resource that is comparable to an alpine field. The amount of condensate that's at risk if we don't cycle first is about approximately 300 million barrels, and that is an alpine field. So that's why my commission has engaged in a study to try to understand what Exxon is saying and come to our own conclusions as to whether it is feasible to get those reserves by cycling, or if going straight to gas blowdown is the only option. And we don't know enough right now. We don't have enough information. We just started that study. But that is exactly what we're trying to find out.
Thank you.
Other questions for Kathy? Okay, do I have a motion to move Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission named Kathy P. Forrester?
I move that we put forward Kathy P. Forrester's name to them.
Okay, this does not reflect an intent by any members to vote for or against the confirmation, just to forward to a joint session. Kathy, thank you very much, and good luck in the future.
Thank you all.
Okay, we will just take about a 15-second break. By Mr. Paul Seaton. Paul, we're going to hold this bill over. We'll make the presentation, but Friday afternoon is never a good time, particularly the weather it is and people. But in all fairness, I think we need to, you know, take a look at the bill and make sure if somebody wants to comment on it at a future date, then we allow them that opportunity. So if you would proceed.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee. House Bill 25 encourages the expansion of recreational opportunities for Alaskans by protecting private landowners that allow free recreational use of their lands, by raising the liability standard to intentional, reckless, or grossly negligent misconduct. Currently, private landowners rely on the unimproved land statute in Alaska law. However, it's problematic because the definition of what is improved and unimproved is not clear in the determinations that have come out of the courts. And so landowners are unable to really assess their liability when they allow recreational use of their land. And so by spelling out the landowner's rights and duties for free recreational use of their land, for trails, for skiing, for hiking, for snow machining across their land, this bill encourages the recreational opportunities throughout Alaska. This bill also does one other thing, and that it protects landowners from adverse possession or prescriptive easement based on them giving free recreational use. That's been one thing that's been problematic. If you allowed somebody to use a trail across your land, do then you run the risk of having someone claim that land as a prescriptive easement, so you cannot change your mind later. So this bill prevents the free recreational use of the private land that you're allowing to be the basis for adverse possession or prescriptive easement. And so it's a relatively simple bill, and that's the content, and that's the entire the entire scope of the bill is to try to help provide additional recreational opportunity. We've had a lot of people from all across Alaska comment, whether they're snow machiners, whether they're hikers and skiers, whether they're people that as land grows up around or as population grows up in areas and things get subdivided, the trails systems become much more a patchwork organization. And we've been contacted by many trails groups that say it would be much better when they try to get people to allow use of those past trails to, if there was some immunity, some surety that the same immunity for unimproved land would be available for any land that they have, not based solely on the status of it being unimproved. Hay fields are really questioned. Whether you have an old hay field, is that unimproved land or is that improved land? And if it's improved land, then you don't have the liability protection. If it's unimproved land, if you have a area that's got a not a pasture but a bog or a clearing on it that was not man-made and wasn't cleared for a hayfield, you've got protection to the same standard. But if it's in the court determines that it was close to an improvement or was improved, then you lose that liability protection that we have provided in statute for unimproved land. And so this extends the very philosophy that the state of Alaska has taken for trying to encourage recreational use of land. Thank you.
Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know we don't care much how people do it outside, but this is a bill that really other states have done similar things or in the process. Could you give us a little idea, Representative Seaton, how this compares to other states?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, there, I think you have 9 pages of documents on other states and what their liability statutes for recreational use, and many, many states have taken the same tact and used it, and each state is set up.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions for Representative Seaton? Yes, Senator Wilkowski.
I know we passed some laws a couple of years ago on adverse possession and prescriptive easements, or at least I thought we did. They wouldn't apply to these, or do they only apply to state lands?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. we passed some eminent domain so that we couldn't take land by eminent domain. I'm unaware that we've changed the adverse possession statutes recently. So adverse possession is if you are going across. Prescriptive easement is more the case here where somebody claims the use of the land and then can claim it for the future. Not that they would own the land like in adverse possession, but that they would claim the use of that land or the use of a trail. And by having it so that you a landowner has to worry about that, it makes private landowners much less willing to allow free recreational use of the land. And I do want to point out that this is only free recreational use of the land. If it's commercial, this does not cover.
Yeah. Senator Wagner.
We did do an adverse possession bill 3 or 4 years ago. I carried the bill, and that's why I had some problems this last year when it was before us, because I thought that took care of all these concerns, and it was called the squatter's bill.
All right.
Yeah, so.
Representative Seaton, on airplanes and landing in my backyard. Is it, what's the status?
Mr. Chairman, if you allow, first of all, if you allow it, if it's not trespass, if you're allowing somebody to use your land for recreational purpose, and the question is recreational purposes are defined in the statute, and It does not include, let me see if it does. I could read off all these, but back in skiing, it doesn't say anything about airfields. It does say it does not include boxing contests, sparring, wrestling matches, or exhibitions, activities involving devices that are subject to the requirements of AS 520. And that might, I'm not sure if that's the device there. Skiing or sledding activities at a ski area that is subject to the requirements of 0445. And so I will have to check and find out which statute these are. I'm not totally familiar with which statute is aircraft.
Okay, and I appreciate you check that. And I'm, you know, because it brings a question of that I've been asked multiple times. But let's take this status. Okay, someone lands in my backyard, and let's just say the airplanes are covered. All right. What if in my backyard has a groomed little area, and someone would call it a strip, but it's home. Is it covered or not covered? Assuming airplanes are part of it, because you mentioned improved, and I'm not sure what improved means.
Mr. Chairman, under this bill, it wouldn't matter whether it's improved or not improved. What it is if you are allowing that and it's free recreational use, it's not a guide landing in a commercial operation. And if we're under the assumption, and I don't know that that's the case, that an aircraft, private aircraft, would be considered the recreational use, then you would be immune from negligence. You wouldn't be immune from gross negligence, intentional misconduct. So if you had what was an airstrip and you put holes in it and covered them up with bushes or something like that, so that there would be something that would be gross negligence or intentional misconduct, and you allowed people to use that strip, then you would not be immune from liability.
Right. If the land is owned collectively by more than one person?
Mr. Chairman, as long as it's private land, it doesn't cover public land, so it wouldn't cover it wouldn't cover a municipality.
Right.
One of the questions that came up originally was, would a municipality then not have to take care of its playgrounds and those things? This does not cover those kind of publicly owned lands. It's only private land. So if it's a partnership that owns a private land and you don't charge for it and you allow people to use it, then that would be protected from simple negligence.
Okay. Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you, Chairman. Just wanted to get the issue of the fact that we're trying to protect landowners when people are using private lands for recreation. That doesn't protect the landowner from any event. I mean, the landowner still has responsibilities. And could you sort of lead us through the issues of attractive nuisances and if you have a trail across your property, do you have some responsibility for maintaining it? Any comments on that?
Sure. Through the chair, and Senator Stevens, getting my side mixed up here. The attractive nuisance statute is a interesting statute in Alaska that says that if a child, now this is only for a minor, if you have something that's an attractive nuisance there and you allow basically, or don't allow, if you just have it and kids come on and get hurt and you should have known that kids were walking by here every day and this was something that was dangerous that was out there, there is a attractive nuisance doctrine in Alaska that you can be liable for that. It's going to be really case specific, at least that's what Ledge Legal tells us, that the courts are going to have to determine what is in this case. It is going to be facts specific as determined by the courts. Remember, this only changes the standard to the same standard that we already allow in statute for unimproved land, for improved land. And it takes away that question of if you have, I mean, there's lots of places that aren't 180 or 160 acre homesteads anymore. You know, they're 10 acres. Well, now how close to a building are you? There's a trail going across the back of your land. Is it unimproved or is it improved? And that is a very case-specific determination that is made right now. And this clarifies that for the individual that owns the land, so that if he allows the trail to go across the back of his land, he doesn't have to worry about that determination. Well, is it too close to the barn, or is it far enough away that it's going to be considered unimproved land? If that's unimproved land, this is the exact same protection as far as the liability standard that he would already have under existing statute.
If we've got some people online, I want to get to those, and because Paul lives here with us, and we can talk to him at any point in time. But thank you very much, Paul. I see here we have four people from Homer. I assume your neighbors, good friends, or organizations that like you or support you. Lindsay Winkler from Homer.
Lindsay, you have to step out, but Dave Brand's ready.
Okay, David Brand, Homer from Ketchumack Nordic Ski Club. David, please put yourself on the record, and we're prepared for your testimony. And David, if you could limit to about 60 seconds, unless you feel compelled that you have to be longer, we'd appreciate it.
A membership group of approximately 300 memberships. I've been involved in trail development maintenance in Alaska for over 30 years, and things have gotten considerably difficult, more difficult in the last 10 years due to smaller parcels of land and things like that as far as recreational trails on private property. People want and need trails close to our urban areas, suburban areas, towns, communities, and with a big concern about liability, developing of trails in neighborhoods, subdivisions, and things like that is very, very problematic. House Bill 825 does a great deal to solve those problems and make recreational use much more available and attractive to local community members. The Ketchumack Nordic Ski Club fully supports House Bill 25, and we encourage you to also. Thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, thank you, David. Questions for David? Thanks, David, for holding on with us here on a Friday afternoon. How's the weather in Homer?
Chilly.
Yeah, we got a little wind down here and a bit of snow.
Yeah.
And no airplanes flying. thank you, David, very much. Millie Martin.
This is Millie Martin. Residing in Homer. I am here speaking for myself, although I would advise that I am also a member of the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly. And I would like to note, and I do believe you have this in your packet, on the 6th of February of this year, the Assembly did pass Resolution 2007-010 that supports House Bill 25. I would also like to note there are 45 other states that have similar statutes to this, so we'll certainly not be alone. I strongly support this bill. I think this is something that will be very beneficial not only to the Southern Peninsula, but throughout the state. We are a state that is more and more interested in the outdoor recreation. It will certainly help to build more trails for both motorized and non-motorized, certainly many advantages to this bill. I would also like to note that our trails in particular are used a great deal by our school students. It has a tremendous benefit to our students and to our schools. I thank you very much. It's been a pleasure listening. It's been a very, very interesting afternoon. Thank you.
Yeah, Millie, thank you very much. Are there any questions of Millie? Yeah, and once again, thanks for your service on the Assembly. David Stutzer from Homer.
Thank you, Chairman. My name is David Stutzer. I'm a landowner and a ski club member, and I've been working this fall and winter with my neighbors to establish actually provide easements to the ski club for the trail that crosses our land. I think this is a very good bill, and it would ease some of the concerns that my neighbors have concerning liability and adverse possession that was discussed by Representative Seaton. I've lived here since statehood, and it used to be that you could go out anywhere and it really wasn't a problem, but you know, with the growth of the state and the development of the areas around towns and cities, the private land is the land that sometimes is necessary for trails, and this bill would allow people to give permission to use those lands without fear of liability, except for, as Paul Seaton said, you know, if it was gross negligence. But most of the time we're not talking about that, but we just would like to get give permission and not have to worry about the liability. I think this is a very good bill, so I would encourage you to support it and pass it on out of your committee. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, David. Questions for David? Yeah, thanks. Has Lindsay made it back yet, David?
No, she's not here.
Okay, all right, thank you. And we will now go to Anchorage with Michael J. Snyder. Hello, Michael.
Chairman Huggins, can you hear me?
We can hear you very well.
Thank you very much. My name is Mike Schneider. I appreciate the opportunity to speak, and I'll keep it short. I think the idea behind this bill is certainly meritorious. It sets up a quid pro quo where landowners are to give recreational access and get certain liability mitigating benefits in exchange. I certainly have some problems, however, with the way the bill is written. For instance, subsection A, a landowner need only to, quote, indirectly, close quote, allow recreational activity. I think that language is entirely too loose. Under Part E, where charge is defined, Part Echo 1 Charlie says a contribution kind service cash. From the user, if all of the contribution is used to improve access, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you can still make the charge. But if you think about that for a minute, somebody could charge me $1,000 to hunt bear on their property or some other something for a period of time. I could fall into an unreasonable, into a hazard, into some pit that they knew about and unreasonably failed to warn me of. They could, after the fact, take my $1,000, put it toward remediation of the problem, and certainly comply with the technical words of this statute. So I guess I would like a chance in the future to suggest some editorial changes that could affect the positive public policy behind this bill, and maybe not give the sort of broad immunity that the bill could give in circumstances where it could conceivably be inappropriate. Thank you.
Yeah, Michael, thank you. If you would, could you contact Representative Seaton directly and have a discussion with him about your concerns?
I will, and through the chair, as an apology to Representative Seaton, I'm frank to say that I did not hear about this bill until yesterday, or I certainly would have spoken to Representative Seaton before appearing to speak about it. I just couldn't get it all done.
Okay, and Michael, you're representing yourself, is that correct?
Well, I'm representing myself. I've been a practicing attorney in Anchorage for 32 years. I represent the injured and dead among us and tort claims primarily. However, I've been interested in acquiring free recreational access to property since approximately the age of 12 when I was given my first shotgun. So those, I guess, I have interests on both sides of this bill.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Question from Senator Wagner.
Just want to take the opportunity to say hi, Michael.
How do you do, Senator? I hope it's warmer there than it is here.
It is, but it's snowing. No planes are flying.
Okay. Other questions for Michael? Yeah. And again, Michael, thank you very much. Other questions for Representative Seaton? We're a couple, 3 minutes past the hour, and we're trying to terminate on time as much as possible. Probably going to hold this over, and if but I'm sorry, Senator Wilkowski, you had a question.
Oh, you know, I can get to it at the next
okay
hearing.
Okay,
I'll have an opportunity. I don't hold that
okay Paul, and last words.
Last words are, we did find that in the tort immunity under unimproved land status does say that an abandoned aircraft landing area is included. So if it, so at least some under the current language, for immunity, if you have an abandoned aircraft landing area, that would receive immunity under the current statute.
Mm-hmm.
If it's away from an improved structure, but if it was anywhere near an improved structure, mm-hmm. Let's say there's a barn left there, right, then it may not qualify for the same immunity that you would have if it's away from the barn or away from. So what this bill does is it makes clarity across both improved and unimproved land.
Okay. So I guess
more about your aircraft example and get back to you.
Okay. Thank you very much, and we stand adjourned.